Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 24, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Text 57. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O King, Maharaj Parikshit, but for the Lord's personal desire, there is no cause for His appearance, disappearance, or activities. As the Supersoul, He knows everything. Consequently, there is no cause that affects Him, not even the results of fruitive activities. Purport. This verse points out the difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and an ordinary living being. An ordinary living being receives a particular type of body according to his past activities. Karmana daivanetrena jantur dehopapattaye. A living being is never independent and can never appear independently. Rather, one is forced to accept a body imposed upon him by Maya according to his past karma. As explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 18, Text 61, Yantra Rudhani Mayaya. The body is a kind of machine created and offered to the living entity by the material energy under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the living entity must accept a particular type of body awarded to him by Maya, the material energy, according to his karma. One cannot independently say, give me a body like this, or give me a body like that. One must accept whatever body is offered by the material energy. This is the position of the ordinary living being. When Krishna descends, however, he does so out of his merciful compassion for the fallen souls. As the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 4, Text 8, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I advent myself millennium after millennium. The Supreme Lord is not forced to appear. Indeed, no one can subject Him to force, for He is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone is under His control, and He is not under the control of anyone else. Foolish people, who, because of a poor fund of knowledge, think that one can equal Krishna or become Krishna, are condemned in every way. No one can equal or surpass Krishna, who is therefore described as asamordhva. According to the Vishvakosha dictionary, the word Maya is used in the sense of false pride and also in the sense of compassion. For an ordinary living being, the body in which he appears is his punishment. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 7, Text 14, Devi Hesha Gunamai Mamamaya Duratyaya. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But when Krishna comes, the word Maya refers to his compassion or mercy upon the devotees and fallen souls. By His potency, the Lord can deliver everyone, whether sinful or pious. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha श्री रूपम साग्रजातम सहगण रघुनाथान्वितम तम सजीवम साद्वैतम सावधूतम परिजन सहितम कृष्ण चैतन्य देवम श्री राधा कृष्ण पादां सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च नम ओम विष्णु पादाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे वंशाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण। सो इन थ्री क्लासेस बिगिनिंग टुडे आई विल डिस्कस the verses from the end of chapter 9 or canto 9, I beg your pardon, leading into the first three chapters of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, culminating in the transcendental appearance of Sri Krishna. The tempo is being built up, so to speak, for Krishna's appearance. And the narrations leading up to that appearance are all through the Srimad Bhagavatam, all the nine cantos actually, are ultimately meant for discussing the glories of Sri Krishna and especially in Vrindavan. In the ninth canto, Shukadev Goswami discusses the descendants of the sun god as well as the dynasty of the moon god. There are two primary Kshatriya dynasties in the universe. One coming from the sun god, Vivaswan, and the other coming from the moon god, Soma. Srila Prabhupada explains that generally when the Lord descends, he appears in a Kshatriya family. Not always, but very often. Why so? Because he descends to establish the principles of dharma. And that is generally done by a kshatriya. The kshatriya is supposed to establish and protect dharma. He has to ensure that the praja or the citizens are following dharma. So if you look at the incarnations of the Lord, many of them have appeared in Kshatriya dynasties. Lord Ram himself, Lord Krishna too. Of course, he went to Vrindavan and played the role of a Vaishya, but his appearance was in a Kshatriya family. So we have these two main dynasties of great, powerful, saintly kings. So you have the Surya Vamsha, the dynasty of the sun, and you have the Soma Vansha, the dynasty of the moon. So the Lord in the form of Ramachandra appeared in the Surya Vamsha, the sun dynasty, and Krishna appeared in the Yadu Vamsha or the Soma Vansha. The Yadu Vamsha is a part of the Soma Vamsha. Vamsha means the dynasty. So now in this ninth canto, Shukadev Goswami has described or enumerated the different kings in the dynasty of the sun god and then the kings in the dynasty of the moon god. Actually, the discussion starts from the beginning, from the fourth canto actually. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions in his commentary that from the time of the description of the activities of Swayambhuva Manu and his descendants, the Srimad Bhagavatam contains elaborate narrations. But that kind of sweetness is not there. However, when it comes to the descriptions of the Surya Vamsha, the Sun dynasty and then the Moon dynasty, then the pastimes become sweet. Among all the incarnations of the Supreme Lord, those in which the Lord appears in a human-like form are considered the sweetest. And amongst them, the pastimes of Lord Ram and Lord Krishna are considered the sweetest. And amongst the two, Lord Krishna's are considered the sweetest. And among Lord Krishna's pastimes, the pastimes in Vrindavan are considered the sweetest. And in Vrindavan, the pastimes of Krishna as an adolescent youth, Kaishora, are considered the sweetest. So, having somewhat described in some degree of detail the pastimes of the descendants of the sun god, Shukadeva Goswami comes into a description of the descendants of the moon god. And finally now, in the end of the ninth chapter, he comes to the point where he describes Vasudev as being the father of Krishna. Vasudev had many queens, as was the practice amongst the Kshatriyas in those days. And through Devaki, he had 8 very qualified sons. The 7th was Sankarshan or Balaram. And the 9th was Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shukadeva Goswami also mentions that Devaki also had one daughter whose name was Subhadra. And Krishna is Swayam Eva Harihi, as described in this verse, in the verse number 55. Swayam Eva Harihi means that the child of Devaki, the 8th son, was not just an incarnation, but he was a source of all incarnations. The word Swayam indicates self. In this context, it means original. Swayam hi Harihi, Swayam Eva Harihi. He is personally the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like we use the term, or the Bhagavatam uses the term, Swayam Bhagavan. Ete chansakalha punsas Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. So Bhagavan Swayam indicates the original personality of Godhead. So here also it indicates Swayam Eva Harihi, that the 8th son of Devaki was not an incarnation, but the source of all incarnations, that is directly Krishna. And the next verse begins with a familiar line, Yada Yada Hi Dharmasya. You've all heard this verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Yada Yada Hi Dharmasya Glanir Bhavati Bharata. Yes? Krishna descends into this, he says he descends into this material world when the irreligion increases and when religion decreases or diminishes. So a similar verse is mentioned here. Yada Yada Hi Dharmasya Kshayo Vriddhi Cha Papmanaha Tadatu Bhagavan Isha Atmanam Srijate Harihi. So when dharma deteriorates, declines, dharmasya kshayaha. Kshaya means also a decrease or a destruction. And vriddhischa papmanaha, and when the sinful activity increases, irreligious activities increase, at that time, tada, tu bhagavan isha, atmanam srijate harihi. So hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, descends into this material world. And then he speaks, Shukadev Goswami speaks the verse which we just read. It describes the reason for the advent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if we are to explain the word Lord's, the reason for the Lord's descent in one word, that would be compassion. Because he is very compassionate to the conditioned living entities. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport here that when Krishna does so, he does so out of his own free, sweet will. Unlike us, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada makes a contrast between our appearance in this world, our birth, and Krishna's appearance. We are forced to take birth. We don't have a choice about the kind of body that we will have to accept once we have performed a certain type of karma. But for Krishna, it is out of his own sweet will that he appears in this world. And how is it that he appears out of his compassion? Because this material world is full of souls who are suffering, who have fallen here, who are conditioned by the laws of material nature. We jivas here in this material world have made the wrong choice. We made a big blunder. We are here in this material world in forgetfulness of Krishna because we chose to be independent enjoyers, which is of course not possible. So Krishna has very kindly made this material world for us. So the construction of the material world, the existence of the material world, is intended to give suffering to the material to the conditioned living entities, and this is a sign of Krishna's compassion. Because through this arrangement, Krishna wants to facilitate the return of the jivas to him. He wants the jivas to go to the spiritual world, which is their real home. And in order to facilitate that further, he also appears time to time in his incarnations. He appears in the form of the holy scriptures, the Vedas. He appears through the saintly devotees, through the holy names. In innumerable ways, Sri Krishna bestows his compassion upon the conditioned souls in this material world. Then Shukadev Goswami goes on to say that he descends along with his plenary expansion, his first expansion, Balaram, and he performs activities which are beyond the mental comprehension of even the great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. And to show causeless mercy to the devotees who would take birth in the future age of Kali, the Supreme Personality of Godhead acted in such a way that by simply remembering him, one will be freed from lamentation and the unhappiness of material existence. So Krishna descends, and as he descends here into this material world, he enacts pastimes. And because he is absolute, there is no difference in his pastimes of giving protection to the devotees on one hand and killing the demons on the other hand. Absolute means that one is equal in all circumstances and the same benefit is derived by both classes of people, the devotees and the demons. Both attain to the spiritual world. The devotees, out of pure love, they attain to the spiritual planets. And the demons, when they are killed by Krishna, they also attain to the spiritual world, mostly into the impersonal Brahman. And rarely, when they are personally killed by Krishna, they may attain to the spiritual planets and become his associates in the spiritual world in Krishna Loka. And Krishna's pastimes are subject matter for all of us conditioned souls to hear. And when we do that, we become freed from all material contamination. And then Shukadev Goswami says that Krishna was accompanied by many, many relatives. These relatives are not ordinary people. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Ananda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. So these relatives, of course, are not ordinary people. The descendants of various dynasties like Bhoja, Vrishni, Andhaka, Madhu, Shurasena, etc. So they accompany him. They are his associates when Krishna appears here. just as an important personality, even in the material world, does not come alone, does not go alone to any place. He goes with his associates. So similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he appears here in this material world, he does so along with his associates. And interestingly, Shukadev Goswami speaks something very sweet here. He says, there are four ways by which he pleases everyone in human society. Nrilokam ramayam asa. Nrilokam means the material world of human beings. Ramayam asa means he pleased. How did he please the people of the material world? Snigdha, by his affectionate behavior. Smita, by his pleasing smiles. Third is Vakyair, by his instructions. And fourth, Vikramalila, his heroic pastimes. So in these four ways, Krishna pleased all the people of this world. Another thing that Srila Prabhupada mentions here as being pertinent from this verse is the phrase Murtya Ramyaya. Murtya Sarvanga Ramyaya. He has a form, a murti. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not something formless. He has a formless aspect, but ultimately he is a Supreme Person. He has a beautiful spiritual form. And that spiritual form is Sarva Anga Ramyaya. Srila Prabhupada translates that as the form that pleases everyone by all parts of the body. Ramyaya means that which pleases. Sarva Anga means every part of Krishna's transcendental body is pleasing. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions, apart from his smiling face, every part of his body, his hands, his legs, his chest, is pleasing to the devotees who cannot at any time stop seeing the beautiful form of the Lord. So let's try to remember this phrase, Sarvanga Ramyaya. Yes, Sarva Anga Ramyaya. So Krishna's entire transcendental body is very pleasing. Every part of his body is very pleasing, which is not the case for the human body. Even for the most beautiful person, there's always some part of the body which is not just quite right. So therefore, because people are so bodily conscious, some cosmetic means or some surgery or this or that, you know, they try to cover up that defect of that particular organ. Someone may have ears that are not proper. Someone may have a smile which is not proper. One tooth which is not quite right. Maybe the hair is a little this way or that way. You know, maybe the gait or something. There's something that's not quite right. Yes? And in this world, when people are very bodily conscious, beauty becomes a very big thing. It's a multi-billion pound or dollar industry, right? Everyone's very conscious of the fact that, you know, one has to look good. But somehow or the other, the material body is such, it cannot be perfect. Even for the most attractive person, there'll always be something which he or she tries to hide, which is not quite right. But for Krishna, it's not the case. His form is Murtya Sarva Anga Ramyaya. His form is exquisitely beautiful, and because it is beautiful, it is pleasing. You see, beauty pleases us. When we see something beautiful, it creates a very pleasing sensation in the mind. So when one looks at Krishna's body, one feels pleased in the mind. And because everything about Krishna is perfect, every part of Krishna's transcendental body is completely perfect. Sarva Anga Murtya Sarva Anga Ramyaya. And now, with this little background, Shukadev Goswami just needs that excuse to launch into a description of Krishna's beauty. You know, we have these two most important qualities of Krishna, his mercy and his beauty. Krishna has many, many transcendental qualities, but these two really stand out. So we just heard about the reason for Krishna's advent being his quality of mercy or compassion upon the conditioned living entities. And now in this verse, this is verse 64, Shukadev Goswami just begins speaking about the beauty of Krishna's form. And in the next verse, 65, which is also a very beautiful verse, Shukadev Goswami elaborates on that. Yasyananam makarakundala charukarna brajat kapola subhagasa vilasahasam nityotsavam natatripur drishbe pibantyo naryo narashamudita kupita nimescha. This is a very famous verse. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quotes this sometimes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Actually, incidentally, if you want to know which are the most important verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one is to read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Whichever verses are cited by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you can understand them to be the most important ones. And of course, for us, we have it simpler. The verses cited by Srila Prabhupada in his lectures and his teachings are the most important ones. So this verse is recited or cited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'll read Srila Prabhupada's translations to this verse. Krishna's face is decorated with ornaments, such as earrings resembling sharks. His ears are beautiful, his cheeks brilliant, and his smiling attractive to everyone. Whoever sees Lord Krishna sees a festival. His face and body are fully satisfying for everyone to see, but the devotees are angry at the Creator for the disturbance caused by the momentary blinking of their eyes. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport here that in the end of the ninth canto, Shukadev Goswami is giving us a hint of Krishna's exquisite transcendental beauty. And even though everything about Krishna is beautiful, especially beautiful is his face. Of course, that's a topic in itself. And in his face, his smile is considered to be even more beautiful. Srila Prabhupada mentions also that Krishna's transcendental form is similar to the progression of the different cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam, being non-different from Sri Krishna, also has a form, a transcendental form, so to speak. So the first two cantos would represent the lotus feet. And then as you rise above, when you come to the tenth canto, that represents the smiling face of Krishna. So in this way, when we come to the tenth canto, that is the most beautiful part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially the part that relates to Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. And then Srila Prabhupada explains that in the tenth canto, the beauty of Krishna is going to be more further elaborated. And the beauty of Krishna is seen by everyone in Braj. But It is only the gopis of Vrindavan who can appreciate that beauty and every aspect of it more than anyone else. Mother Yashoda also dresses Krishna, decorates him, bathes him. She also perceives the beauty of Krishna. The cowherd boys see the beauty of Krishna. Everyone in Vrindavan sees the beauty of Krishna. But the way the gopis minutely observe, note the different aspects of Krishna's beauty is unparalleled. Srila Prabhupada says in the final lines of this purport to this verse, quote, "The beauty of Krishna's face was therefore much more appreciated by the gopis than by his friends the cowherd boys, or even by Yashoda Mata, who was also interested in decorating the face of Krishna." This verse gives a hint of how beautiful his face is. Krishna's smiling face with his cheeks, his lips, the ornaments in his ears, his chewing of betel nuts. All this was minutely observed by the gopis, who thus enjoyed transcendental bliss, so much so that they were never fully satisfied to see Krishna's face, but instead condemned the creator of the body for making the eyelids that obstructed their vision. So in this verse, Krishna's beauty is being described in a way that appears to be contradictory because of two words mentioned here. In the last line it says mudita, naryo narasya mudita. All the men and women of Vrindavan were very happy to see Krishna's face. Yasya, of whom? Anana. Anana means the face. His face was so beautiful that it gave enormous happiness to all the men and women of Vrindavan. Makara kundala charu karna. So his anana or his face looked very beautiful. Charu, the word charu means beautiful. So his face, his anana looked very beautiful because of his beautiful ears, karna, and also because those ears were decorated by earrings which are shark-shaped, shaped like a shark, makara kundala. Kundala means earring, makara means shark. Brajat kapola. And his cheeks were shining, were radiant. Subhagasu vilasa hasam. And his transcendental body was very, very attractive and especially smiling. Nityotsava. Nitya means always, eternal. Utsava means a festival. So Krishna's beauty, Krishna's form, Krishna's face, and his smiling in particular, is a daily festival for the residents of Vrindavan. Now generally for us, a festival is a periodic thing that comes once in a while, Janmashtami, God Purnima, etc. But actually for the residents of Vrindavan, every moment was a festival because they were always seeing Krishna. And especially they relished seeing Krishna's beautiful smile. So nityotsavam. So even though they were very happy to see Krishna's beautiful face and his smile, but kupita, they were also very angry. They were angry at Brahma, the creator of this body. What kind of body have you created? There's some manufacturing defect here. The defect is that these eyes are blinking. And when the eyes blink, they close. And when the eye closes, then we cannot see Krishna. Even though it is only for a fraction of a moment, but what a great loss it is that we are not able to see Krishna and his pleasing smiles for that fraction of a moment. The eyes are meant to see Krishna with unblinking gaze. But here, because we are forced to blink, there is something wrong in the way the Creator has made it. So they condemn him. Kupita Nimescha. Nimescha means the blinking of the eyes, which very quickly blink. So in this way, there's a beautiful description of Krishna's beauty here. Srila Prabhupada also mentions in the purport that the inhabitants of Vrindavan saw Krishna almost at every moment. But when Krishna left the village for the pasturing grounds, where he tended the cows and calves, the gopis especially were very much afflicted, because they would look at Krishna's tender feet, lotus feet, and they would think that all the sharp pebbles and the chipped stones and perhaps the thorns in the forest would prick his soft feet and they would cause him pain. So the gopis would be quite afflicted with such a thought in their mind. Of course, actually speaking, there was no pain to Krishna's lotus feet. And you all know the story or the pastime. When Krishna starts the grazing of the calves, Mother Yashoda wants him to wear shoes because she fears exactly that, that Krishna's lotus feet will get pricked by the thorns and the pebbles in the forest. But Krishna says, no, I can't do that, because I can't do something, I can't accept a facility that the dear calves won't have. So if you want me to wear shoes, you should also provide shoes for the cows and the calves. And that was a really tall order, even for Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, the father and mother of God, because there were 900,000 cows. And remember, each has four legs. So you have to provide so many shoes, and that would really not be practical. So then Mother Yashoda said, all right, what to do? Okay, go. But all the thorns and the pebbles and all the living entities of Vrindavan noted this. And they were thinking, we should ensure that Krishna is not troubled. So all the deer and the animals, the cows, etc., they made sure that all the pebbles and thorns were crushed to dust. So they stamped upon everything that could possibly be a source of pain for Krishna. And they made sure everything was just fine and smooth. How many of you have been on the Govardhan Parikrama? Yes. And one of the memories you may have, for those of you who used to go in the earlier years, maybe not so much of the recent times, is the pricks on the soles of your feet. Yes? But there's a long stretch which has been transformed. Devotees from various sampradayas, from various organizations, various types of people, pious people, devotees, everyone has come together to make a very smooth, sandy road. And they have actually plucked out, taken out all the thorns there. Otherwise, I remember in the early years when we used to go for parikrama, every third step we would have to pause to pluck out a thorn from the feet. It was really difficult. But then the people have now come forward and made it smooth and soft. So the devotees of Krishna will have a very pleasant experience in the parikrama. The problem arises with so-called development. When they start making these tarred roads and that's substandard, then the tar chips off, you have little those stones that come up, they hurt the feet, not the thorns. But in any case, the residents of Vrindavan, the animals, the birds, everyone, cooperate to make the dust of Vrindavan, the floor, the ground of Vrindavan, very, very comfortable for Krishna. So in any case, the gopis' mentality was like that. They would consider the comfort of Krishna in all situations. And finally, in the last verse of this chapter, last two verses, Krishna also, Shukadev Goswami describes his pastimes in Vrindavan. In brief, he says, Krishna is known as Leela Purushottam. He appeared as a son of Vasudev, but immediately left his father's home and went to Vrindavan to expand his loving relationship with his confidential devotees. In Vrindavan, the Lord killed many demons, and afterwards he returned to Dwarka, where, according to Vedic principles, he married many wives who were the best of women, begot through them hundreds of sons, and performed sacrifices for his own worship to establish the principles of household life. Srila Prabhupada says in the first verse of the 10th canto that this verse is actually a summary of Krishna's Leela and summary of the glories of Vrindavan, and that these will be elaborated further in the 10th canto. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions an important point. I would also like to elaborate on that, but we are running short of time today. So we'll continue with this tomorrow morning, and we'll move into the 10th canto and try to summarize the first chapter tomorrow. So if you have any questions or any comments, we have a few minutes.